Recorded live from the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Pelias Pecans.
Awesome!
The Soft Verbal Podcast, your ticket to the latest, most accurate Ole Miss football recruiting information. No spin, no false hopes, just facts from the recruiting trail from RebelGrove.com recruiting analyst Russell Johnson.
Caution, you are about to enter the no spin zone.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
God, here we go again.
Welcome into the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. I am your host, Neil McCready. Russell Johnson out on assignment today. Today, our special guest is Rob Cassidy of Rivals.com. We're going to talk some recruiting. We're going to talk about some of the prospective coaching candidates at Ole Miss. It's a little early to talk necessarily about specific candidates, but we're going to talk about some different guys that are out there. Rob had a story out earlier this week about five guys that sort of deserve a shot. We'll talk about those guys and some others, maybe what would be a fit, which guys might be best suited for a reclamation project, for a rebuild from a recruiting standpoint. We'll talk about that in a minute. First, let me tell you about Billy's Pecans. It's never too early to plan for the holiday season, so get a jump start on your gift-giving list, whether it's for business or family. Billy's offers gift towers, samplers, gift bags, and more to please every sweet tooth on your list. Now's the perfect time to line up your Thanksgiving cakes. Order Billy's Blueberry Pecan Coffee Cake or Cinnamon Pecan Coffee. They'll freeze beautifully until the big day. Order now and Billy's will ship your gift on the date requested. They make it super easy. Email your list of recipients to gifts@billyspecans.com. They will handle the rest. If you want your logo on the gift, they do that too. They even provide a complimentary gift card for you to express whatever you want to that special person. Go to their website at billyspecans.com. See what they have to offer. Their two most popular gifts for corporate clients are the Simply Duo and the Party Trio. But everything you see is a perfect gift. You can order online at billyspecans.com, email at gifts@billyspecans.com, or call 1-800-624-7404, and Stacy or Billy will assist with your gifting needs. Rob, I'm going to get you some Billy's Pecans. They're awesome. If you have a sweet tooth, and I think you do based on some of the Halloween discussions that we've had and that we're about to have, some of the stuff they have are, if you like pecans, you like nuts, these are awesome. So I'll get some of those to you for coming on the program. How are you?
I'm good. I'm going to hold you to that, though. I mean, this isn't one of these throwaway lines.
No. You're going to love them, man. They sent me some, and I'm still kind of mad at my girls because my girls destroyed them. The samplers were gone. And I had plans for them, and they disappeared quickly. And then, but based on the amount that I had, it was kind of hard for me to blame them. Some of those, like the sandies, the little pecan sandies, and the cinnamon sugar pecans, they're like crack, man. It was awesome. Before we get started, let me tell you, we're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi. Call 662-257-1900. You tell Corey Clark what new Ford you're looking for. He will send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. There's no haggling. It's right to the bottom line. People have purchased, based on the podcast, they have purchased from Corey from Cape Girardeau to Biloxi, from Dallas to Atlanta, all points in between. It's because it's so simple. It's no haggling. It's right to the bottom line. You get a great deal on your Ford vehicle. And then at the end of your deal, as you're finishing everything with Corey, say, hey, Corey, I heard about the dealership on the podcast. You can mention any of our family of podcasts, including this one, of course. $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900. So how you doing?
I'm doing, man. It's you know, things are getting back to normal here after, you know, we dealt with some hurricane stuff, but you know, things are good. I had an interesting couple of weeks. You know, after the week following the hurricane, I was in Las Vegas, across the street from where all of that happened.
Were you there when it happened?
Yeah, I was in the casino across the street. It was insane. It was complete insanity. People were running like mad, man.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I ran. Take me through that night,
if you would. I'm fascinated.
So we weren't at the country music concert because country music's not really my thing, but we went to the Golden Knights game at the T-Mobile Arena, the preseason game,
okay,
which is right by Mandalay Bay. If you're familiar with the Strip, it's kind of behind Excalibur. So it's two casinos over. So after the game, we went to the Tropicana. We're sitting there playing. we heard something had happened. We'd read on Twitter. Nobody really knew what the scope of it was. I just thought, you know, maybe a person or two got shot. So, you know, we continued with our night. And then it became a little bit more clear what had happened. And I think what happened, where we were anyway, is that after everybody got a little bit scared after figuring out what had happened across the street, somebody got spooked. But, you know, in those situations, when one person runs, everybody scatters. You know, I threw a drink across the casino. The dealers were jumping over their tables. I ran through a employees only door into the bowels of a casino that I've not ever seen before. So I was like hiding in a storage room with this couple from Brazil for like 20 minutes until they gave us the all clear. But nobody ever figured out what happened. Like if it was people from across the street that ran over, or if somebody just started running and everybody got spooked, because I don't think my life was actually ever in danger or anything like that. But I sure thought it was for a solid 10 minutes.
Yeah. So you didn't like hear the shots or anything. So you're just kind of operating in the dark at that point.
Yeah. I mean, we'd known people had been shot across the street. At that point it pretty well spread throughout the city and definitely throughout the strip. I never heard the shots. No, I had no idea. I just saw people running. So it was time for me to run as well.
What was Vegas like the next day?
I flew out the next day. It was that night though. So that we were staying at Caesars, me and a bunch of my buddies, and they shut down everything. Whereas even if you had a room key, they would not let you in. So, and nobody was serving drinks. There were no table games. So we just sat outside of Caesar's Palace until 4 a.m. and they let us in the doors finally. You know, an angry, crowded forum trying to get back in their room. And it was, you know, it wasn't great.
Yeah, what was the airport like the next day? I mean, I would think a lot of really frazzled people.
It wasn't that bad. Yeah, there were frazzled people. We thought there would be crowds with people moving flights up. But, you know, it wasn't as crowded as we thought it would be.
So did you stay in Miami during the hurricane or did you get out?
No, I went back home. I went to New York for the week, which apparently, and I didn't know this, it's apparently there's great shame brought upon you if you leave Miami during a hurricane. Everybody makes fun of you when you come back. So I had like coaches and I had players and, you know, I'm 305 until I die. I guess you're not. No, I'm not. I'm leaving.
Yeah. You know, I lived in Mobile for a while. We lived on the Eastern Shore, and I stayed for Katrina and left the year before for Ivan. Ivan did a lot of damage, and, you know, I left and came back. And when I got back, I said, it's such a pain in the ass to take all the boarding down and all that stuff. I'm staying for the next one. And then, of course, Katrina came through and Laura and I guess our girls at the time, we had two, our son was not born yet. She took the girls and they went to Birmingham and I stayed with our Labrador retrievers and watched Katrina blow through. Now Katrina hit Mississippi more than it hit Alabama, of course. But at that point I said, I'm just going to stay. But I never made fun of the people who left because frankly, leaving was the smart thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've really set this podcast on fire with a very happy tone.
I didn't know you were in Vegas, so I was fascinated. All right, let's talk about this. So about some recruiting, you have a piece on Rivals.com that I think it went up yesterday. Rob's rankings, coaches ready to move up, Trick or Treat fails. We're going to get to Trick or Treat in a minute. Let's start with some of these coaches. A guy that a lot of Ole Miss fans talk about, and frankly, I've heard from sources that he's not interested in the Ole Miss job right now and probably won't be, but Scott Frost, you're there in Florida. He's at Central Florida. He has Nebraska ties. I know there's a real chance that job opens. What do you hear about him, and what is it about Scott Frost that has everyone so excited?
I know Scott a little bit because I was covering Kansas State when he was a graduate assistant there for a year. I never got the impression that he was going to be this commodity one day. It's amazing how quickly this happened. And I think it's pretty clear why people like him. You know, he's had success everywhere he's gone. He was in charge of that juggernaut Oregon offense that had success. When he left, things kind of, you know, fell off a cliff. He takes over a UCF team that was 0-12, goes 6-6 the next year, and this year has a chance to go undefeated. I mean, that conference isn't good. They've beaten everybody soundly. They've covered every spread they've gone up against. The offense looks like a juggernaut, like it did at Oregon when he was there. There's I mean, and there's not a lot of difference in the roster. I mean, there's some, but this is definitely a culture change and a coaching change that can be thanked for all this. So Frost's resume, short as it may be, I think kind of speaks for itself. I think he's going to be a red hot coach. I think you're going to see him become Tom Herman-esque as the season goes forward, where everybody wants to get him. I think Nebraska fans think it's a foregone conclusion they can get him, but just because a guy went to a school, I mean, and he may well go there. Who knows? I don't know that just because a guy went there, you can just bank on getting him, especially if you're Nebraska and you're not in, you know, this isn't 1996 anymore.
I was going to ask you, because there was a time when Nebraska was an awesome job. And I've never been to Lincoln. I'm sure it's great. I know there's great fan support, et cetera, et cetera. I get it. I'm not ripping Nebraska for our Nebraska fans that are listening to the podcast. But I don't know that I would say Nebraska's a top 15 job anymore. In fact, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't say that it's a top 15 job.
No, I mean, the success that they once compounded on itself is so far in the past, the kids they're recruiting don't remember it. It's in an isolated area in Lincoln where there's not a ton of talent around it. There's a lot working against it. And now what you do have working for is the fan support. I mean, it's unlike almost anywhere in the country. I mean, they sell out that giant stadium for spring games. It is an insane place. The fans there are some of the greatest fans in college football. They don't get that moniker for no reason.
Right.
But you're still recruiting, trying to recruit from California and Texas and Florida to Lincoln, Nebraska, when you don't have a track record of success in these kids' lifetimes. It's not easy. And, you know, is that something Scott Frost considers? I know he's an alum. I know he played there. And that allure is definitely real. But I don't know if that's enough to make it an open and shut case, you know?
So what do you think he does? Do you think he goes to Nebraska, or do you think he – because there are some people – I know this for a fact. There are some people very close to him who are saying, you're in a good place. Hang tight. If it means another year at UCF, there are worse places. Hang tight. You're going to get an elite gig, a top 10 gig, one of these really sexy gigs. Do you think he – does he gamble on himself to that degree, or do you sense that he'll take a job this year?
I would if I were him, but you know, the appeal of nostalgia and going back home is a real thing. I mean, that's a real thing. What if A&M comes open this year?
That was the job I was about to mention to you.
There's going to be a bidding war, right? And who's got more money there? I mean, Nebraska's got money, but I don't know if they have A&M money. And you know, money matters. Nostalgia matters. Your alma mater matters, but money also matters.
Yeah, every time I pay my mortgage, they want money, not nostalgia.
Yeah.
Brent Venables, I'm going to be honest. Here's a name that I thought, and that's popped up in some Ole Miss fan circles. It's a name that I thought right now would have a lot more buzz behind it as it pertains to maybe the Ole Miss job, some of the SEC gigs. And maybe it does, and I've just missed it, but I haven't heard his name much. You've got him number two, and I agree with you there. What about Venables as a guy who could come into a program that needs to be rebuilt? He doesn't have head coaching experience, but he's been at some successful places. You might know him a little bit better than I do. I don't know him at all. Is he a guy that could come in and do that? Is that his personality?
Yeah, and you know, just like Frost, he's also a K-State guy. He's a Bill Snyder disciple. He was coached under him there. He's one that, like, you know, I don't know Brent personally. He coached at K-State before I covered the team. People say that there's like they worry about how he'll be able to deal with the responsibilities of being an head coach, not the X's and O's, but so much as the other things that surround it. Like, I don't think you'd want to put Brent Venables in LA or a giant media market. I think, you know, he's obviously a masterful defensive coach. He's got recruiting ties to the South, which would help Ole Miss, or a school like Ole Miss located in this region. He's recruited Florida very well in the past, every stop he's been to. And the success on the field speaks for itself. I think he's waiting too, though. I think he wants – I don't think he's going to leave his cushy post, like we said, Frost, for just any job. He wants a place where he's pretty confident he can win. He's pretty confident he can make some good money and have it be the right fit. I think that's why we've seen him stay at Clemson as long as he has.
Do you buy any of the speculation that he's waiting for Snyder?
Again, now we're talking about nostalgia again. Yeah, he played at K-State. But there are just so many other schools that could put him in better situations to win, that could pay him more. I don't know. I can't see him going to K-State. I just don't think – if you're going to be a coach and you've waited this long to get a job, is that the job you're waiting for? I don't think that K-State's the kind of job you wait years to get unless your time there is really that big of a, you know, that much of an allure.
Before we go further, let me get your thoughts. You've covered the SEC. You've been around, certainly from a recruiting standpoint. When you look at the Ole Miss job right now, and I understand it's almost impossible to give it a grade because of the NCAA situation. You don't know how that's going to be resolved. How do you sort of evaluate the Ole Miss job in terms of its attractiveness or lack thereof to a coaching candidate?
You know, I think when Ole Miss is going, it's an attractive place. And I've said this before, and I've taken so much heat from Mississippi State fans for this, but I think that kids that grow up in Mississippi want to go to Ole Miss if all things are equal. And I think that the talent level in Mississippi and the Alabama area, it's a little bit overlooked. It's definitely an upcoming talent region. It's surely better than Lincoln, Nebraska. I think it's an attractive job when things are going well. I think right now, obviously, nothing happens in a vacuum, I guess is the way to say it. I think this year, right now, with the uncertainty, it definitely hurts. But I don't think it's so toxic of a job that, you know, they're going to scare away decent coaching candidates or anything like that. Will they be able to get a Scott Frost if they want him? Probably not. But I think that there are coaches that with just as bright futures that would take a hard look.
Here's a guy that I do think will take a look. Mike Norvell, he's at Memphis, has ties in this area. Now, there's rumors that he's already the next guy at Arizona State, assuming there's an opening there. He's the former offensive coordinator there. That makes some sense from, like you said, a nostalgic familiarity standpoint. But he is an hour from Oxford. He's a very good young coach. That's clear. He's an excellent recruiter. And I think he's a guy that if he got an SEC gig, and he's popped up at Arkansas too, there are rumblings about Bielema there, obviously, given what's happened this season. I think he's a guy that if you gave him SEC tools, he might be dangerous.
Yeah, I think that it's a risk-reward thing with him. Yeah, he could be dangerous. He's been good everywhere he's gone. His offensive has always been good. He was, you know, great at Arizona State, and those offenses were cooking. They kind of fell off when he left. But I guess the difference between him and a Frost is that Frost took over and built a program. As a head coach, Norvell kind of took over a program that was built. I mean, they were rolling under Fuente.
Yeah, took over a program from a guy who's excellent.
Yeah, so you just haven't seen the progression you'd like to see. But, you know, that's why you could probably get him right now. So you take a flyer on a guy, and I can see why you'd think this if you were Ole Miss, and could end up being a slam dunk hire that you end up getting for, you know, a bargain discount. But on the other hand, Ole Miss is not in a space where they can fail on one of these risks. I think the next hire that they make is going to be massive for this program and the direction it goes. And, you know, if they're sure, they better be sure before they hire a guy like Norvell, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that, which leads us to Jeremy Pruitt. You've got him at number four. He's been at Georgia. He's been at Florida State. He's obviously at Alabama. The Nick Saban thing, look, it's working with Kirby Smart. You know, I don't know if Jimbo Fisher counts as a Saban disciple. He certainly had success. McElwain was – there's different ways you can interpret the Saban thing. What do you know about Pruitt? I know you know him before Alabama. You know him since at Alabama. He's a guy that gets mentioned a lot as he's going to get opportunities. His name has come up pretty prominently in some Ole Miss circles. What do you think of him as a guy, again, being asked to come in and rebuild a program, which is completely opposite of what he's doing right now, which is basically just walking in each morning and hitting the on button on the coffee pot?
Yeah, it's a lot easier to recruit players when you can just slide them a picture of Nick Saban over the table, right? But that's a risk. That's even more of a risk than Norvell. I mean, here's a guy that's never been a head coach. He's had success where he's been, but he's been in, let's call it what it is, extremely cushy situations. He hasn't really had to scrap or fight to land players or win games where he's gone in. But he does have a certain cachet for being with Saban. I mean, look, we saw it with Lane Kiffin. I wrote a story a long time ago, not that Lane Kiffin is going to succeed where he is, so maybe that's a bad example. Things are not going well there, I don't think. Kids don't remember that, though. I did a player survey about Kiffin when he first took the FAU job down here with Florida kids. And I just asked them, you know, tell me what you know about Lane Kiffin. Not one of them mentioned that he was the head coach at USC. They didn't know. I had to tell a lot of them that he was after this exercise was over. Definitely didn't know he was ever at Tennessee. Had no clue that he'd coached for the Oakland Raiders. They just knew he's a guy from Alabama that was really good there under Nick Saban, and we all want to play for him because Alabama. And I think the same thing with Pruitt. I mean, there is a certain thing that goes along with coaching there, especially if you can coach there and get your name advertised a little bit as being associated with that program. I think you get a rub, to use a wrestling term. And kids like it. They eat it up. So if you could ride that wave and get players interested, I think it helps. But it definitely, I have him so low on that list because he is a risk.
And then Fritz done a great job at Tulane, but he's 57. I mean, the age.
He's not for Ole Miss. He's no. That's not. No, that's no. not. He's for Kansas. He's for Missouri. He's for a school that needs a three-year doctor to come in there and just get it going in a different direction. That's what I said in the story. He's not for Ole Miss. Ole Miss has got enough working for it that they don't need a complete overhaul for 2 years and then let him go. Kansas needs that.
He's done a great job at Tulane. He would make some sense for Kansas.
Yeah, absolutely. Lay a foundation because that's what he does. He turns schools around. He did it at the JUCO level. He did it at Georgia Southern when they came to FBS. He's really good at taking you from nothing to something.
Are there any other names that didn't pop up on this list that you thought about?
Not really. I think for Ole Miss, which direction do you want to go is the question. I mean, do you want to go one of these first-time FBS coaches, or are they?
If I'm them, I don't. If I'm them, I want to hire an established head coach who's got experience in Power 5 programs, who's stable, who has a strong staff or could assemble a strong staff. I'm not as hung up on recruiting ties as others. I mean, here's some of the names that pop up. Frank Wilson, mm-hmm. Which makes a lot of sense. Norvell, Pruitt. Among fan circles, Mike Leach's name comes up. I don't think that's realistic at this point.
I love him. Him and I are, you know, cut from the same cloth, I think. I enjoy talking to him. I would love to see him closer in the Southeast.
How would he recruit in the Southeast? Because I'll tell you this, whether it's Ole Miss or not, if I'm Missouri, Mike Leach comes to mind. Mike Leach won at Lubbock. He's won in Pullman. Why couldn't he win at one of the outposts in the SEC?
Yeah, I think he could. I mean, he's always said to play for Washington State, you have to be an adventurous kid, which is nice because to play for Mike Leach, you also have to be an adventurous kid. It's definitely not your typical program. It's not your typical coach. He's a guy with outside interests. He's a pleasure to talk to. Some of the interviews I've done with him have been among my favorite. I think he can win there. I just think he'd have to get a staff. He does have ties to Florida. The guy does live in Key West in the offseason and do pirate things down there. But I don't think he's necessarily going to be an ace recruiter. But when you're at Ole Miss, I think that job, SEC jobs in general, attract assistant coaches can recruit because they want to be in this fertile recruiting ground that is the SEC with Florida and Georgia and even Alabama and Mississippi now. So if he can assemble the right staff, you can't argue with his offense. You can't argue with with the production. And if he can get some talent on top of the level that he has at Washington State right now, which is mediocre at best, I think he could be mighty dangerous at Ole Miss. I actually love that hire. It's definitely a risk, but if they could get him, that's I guess he'd put me on board with that.
Yeah, I actually think some guys like him are fun. I think these coaches that take themselves so freaking seriously and turn football into a 20-hour-a-day job.
It's refreshing with him, right? It's like all these guys that win, they're like, I have to be in the office at 3 a.m. And Mike Leach is like, I go to Key West in my bye week.
Yeah.
He still wins.
You just win games. They're 6-0 at Washington State. What about Wilson? His name comes up a lot. And I'll tell you the other name that comes up a lot is Chad Morris at SMU. You know anything about either one of those guys?
I've never crossed paths with either one of them. I know that people that have worked with them, obviously, say good things about them. And you can't argue with Wilson's success right now. I mean, he's really doing a nice job where he is. I don't know as much about him as I do the other guys. Are you – you're in the camp of Wilson?
No, I'm not in a camp. I don't know Wilson. He was here before I was. He was on Orgeron's staff. And then he left and he was with Orgeron at Tennessee. He was with Orgeron at LSU. Now he's at Texas San Antonio. I find the interest in him.
Hey, Orgeron might be available at the end. I'm kidding. I'm going to get booed off this podcast.
But along those lines, I find it interesting that Ole Miss people, after that abomination, are interested in hiring an Orgeron guy. That it strikes me as being And it's not fair to Frank Wilson because he might end up being a really good coach. I have some people who say he's going to be a great coach. But it strikes me as being a slave to familiarity.
Yeah, I guess the devil's advocate of this is, if Orgeron's taught us anything, right, it's that a guy can be a spectacular position coach, coordinator, and be an awful head coach. And I guess the two things aren't really linked, right? Is he was never the head coach at Ole Miss. He didn't ruin Ole Miss. Miss Wilson did. I mean, that all falls on Orgeron. I think just because you're on a guy's staff, I don't think you can really point to him as, you know, he's part of the problem. Reports coming out of Ole Miss are saying that, you know, maybe Ed is a little bit more of a control freak than we even thought, meddling in the offense after he hires an offensive coordinator. So, you know, it's hard to work under those conditions if that stuff is true.
Yeah, you know, the thing about, like, Orgeron is I think he's living proof of you have to be more than a recruiter to be a head coach.
Yes.
Ed's a great recruiter. That's obvious. He's a relentless recruiter. He's very good at it.
Been and a likable guy. That doesn't make you a good head coach.
Yeah, but to be a head coach, you just – to be a boss, to be a CEO, you have to have different layers to your personality. I just don't know that he does. I'm not the guy that rips him, because all he's guilty of doing is campaigning for and taking a job that he badly wanted. That's it. It's not his fault that it didn't work out. The fact that it's not working out to a certain degree is somewhat predictable.
Yeah, I think everybody kind of knew it was going down that path. That whole situation, and not to derail this thing, but if you're going to fire Les Miles, shouldn't you have somebody in mind or waiting and not just, okay, well, we just fired one of the most successful coaches in the area. Let's give the defensive line coach a shot.
Well, they did have someone in mind. And then when that didn't work out, they got their feelings hurt. And they should have known. And we've talked about this a lot on our podcast. It's one of those deals where, though, at that moment in time, and it's hard to do, it's hard to say, it's hard to be the guy that says, you know, I went after the really pretty girl and she said no to me publicly and she picked another guy publicly. Now, I've got to go back.
If you're me, you don't shoot your shot at the same girls that Leonardo DiCaprio is shooting shots at. Texas has got more resources. Leo's got way more resources. That's a better looking dude. It's a better looking job. I wouldn't even – once Leo turned his interest to the pretty girl, I'm out. I am 100% out.
You're moving on to another girl.
I've been out. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we all got to get in where we fit in. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. Along those lines, I'm curious on this. This is the guy that I think is interesting, and I don't think Ole Miss is interested in him. I really don't. I would be if I were Ole Miss. If I'm going to throw two names at you. If either Brett Bielema or Kevin Sumlin is let go from his current gig, would either one of them make a fit at Ole Miss?
Those are risks, you know, retreads. Someone is energetic enough. I think that he has enough of an alert as staff-wise to maybe do well at Ole Miss. I still think that's, you know, there are better options out there probably, especially right off being fired where your name's kind of sullied a little bit. But, you know, he's got the ties to Texas where Ole Miss needs to do some supplemental work, obviously. You can make a case for him, I think. Bielema, I don't know. Everybody remembers, you know, things were headed down a bad path at Wisconsin when he jumped ship to Arkansas. I don't know that there's anything in a recent track record that says that, you know, that's the guy for Ole Miss right now.
Yeah, well, we have a lot of time left until we find out. It's still, I think Ole Miss is expecting their COI stuff probably sometime in the next month. And I think at that point, it's going to become a lot more clear who they can and cannot attract. We're going to shift our attention to Halloween here in a moment. First, let me tell you that the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans is also brought to you by Fidelity Mortgage agent John Benelli. John's been in the mortgage business for 13 years. He has extensive experience in conventional loans, FHA loans, USDA rural development loans, VA loans, and bond loans. John specializes in home mortgages, loan services in the Jackson-Flowood area. He services the entire state of Mississippi, though, from condos in Oxford to vacation homes on the coast, all points in between. I've known John a long time. Won't meet a better guy. Won't meet a more responsible guy, a guy who's going to go the extra mile for you to make sure you get a great deal. You can contact John at fidelitymort.com or 601-842-9764. Fidelity Mortgage, LLC, NMLS, 1039190. The podcast is also brought to you by the Storage Acquisition Group. The Storage Acquisition Group is an industry-leading expert at identifying and acquiring strategically located storage facilities throughout North America and beyond as the preferred buyer for one of the largest private owners of self-storage in the world. Director Monty Spencer and his team have upended the acquisitions market by giving facility owners a new avenue to divest. How exactly can self-storage facility owners benefit? It's simple. The group buys direct and charges no commission or fees. They're free. No obligation evaluation even means that you can get a comprehensive picture of your property's value without the need to commit. If you're thinking, yeah, but I don't own a self-storage facility, I was just enjoying the podcast. Listen to this. Even if you're not an owner, you can benefit too. The Storage Acquisition Group buyer has a generous referral program in place for referrals that lead to a closed transaction. Visit www.thestorageacquisitiongroup.com to find out more. All right, you talk about Halloween still being a few weeks away. It's a couple weeks away.
It's too early to be prepared, though.
No, it's time to get prepared. Are you a dress up? Are you going to dress up for Halloween?
I probably won't. I'm so bad at it. I enjoy Halloween, but I'm such a procrastinator that, like, I'll wait, and then it'll be, like, the day before, and it's, like, there's no creative costume at this point, so I just end up wearing something ridiculous.
Yeah.
That doesn't look like anything.
I always say I'm going to do it, and then I don't, because I end up saying I'm going to go buy a Halloween costume, and my wife gives me the guilt trip about how you're wasting money on a Halloween costume when we could spend that money on this or this or this, and I'm like, oh, whatever.
I once got so, like, hard up for a Halloween costume that it was, like, you know, the day before, as always, and it's like, here's a Santa Claus hat and a red marker and a meat cleaver, and it's killer Santa Claus. I'm so bad at it. I'm telling you. It's embarrassing.
Killer Santa Claus. All right, you rank the five worst things you can give to trick-or-treaters. I have a theory, Rob, that a person can judge another person accurately.
Okay.
Based on what they give out at Halloween.
All right, so where are you on my list? Are we in agreement that all of those things are cop-outs?
Yes, let's start with number one. Anything that doesn't rot your teeth, you should not give that out on trick-or-treat. I could not agree more. Trick-or-treat, Halloween is not a time for apples or plums or grapes or that stuff. No kid goes to the damn door and says, trick or treat in their fancy outfit, hoping to get an apple.
No, it's a good way to get your house eggs too.
You deserve at that point, you know, you deserve a trick at that point.
Look, and I understand if you're a dentist or something, just turn your light off. This day isn't for you. Like, you can just abstain. You don't need to. It's like a form of shaming kids here by handing them toothbrushes and apples. And I know that, you know, this world today, we're not in for kid shaming. So maybe these dentists just need to sit this one out.
Yeah, see, if I'm a dentist, I love Halloween. If I'm a dentist, I'm going, hey, man.
Come in here and let me rub this pure sugar on your teeth.
Bring your cavities to me. Candy corn. All right. I'm weird about candy corn because I don't like it, yet I can sit in my – Here's full disclosure. The NBA season starts on Tuesday. Normally it starts around Halloween. And so it's November and I'm an NBA junkie. And God, this is so revelatory of what a loser I am. It'll be late November, right? And I'm watching Knicks Bulls. No, that's not a good example. I'm watching Blazers Mavericks in Portland at 11:30 at night. And I've finished off a bottle of wine, and I have a sugar rush. I want sugar so bad. And I go dig through my kids' leftover Halloween, and I'll take the stuff that I know they don't want because they won't notice it. because I don't want to get called on it. Like, hey, who ate all my Snickers? Where it's like me. No one ever says, hey, who ate all my candy corn? And at 11:30 at night, when you kind of have a little buzz going, it's not so bad.
No, it's a rule as old as time. Steal the things you won't get caught stealing. It's the rule that dictated me when I used to steal like cheap scotch from my dad when I was in high school. It's like, well, he hasn't opened this bottle of Scoresby's in 3 years. Just drink that.
It's horrible and I can't get it down, but...
Nobody's going to notice.
He's not going to know. I'm not going to get my ass beat.
No, it's a good strategy, yeah. But I'm out on candy corn. I think it's a cop-out. I think it's cheap. I think it's an insult to trick-or-treaters everywhere.
Okay, I was so happy to hear you say this, Tootsie Rolls, which I think are one of the worst candies ever made.
Yeah, it's just like wax. You can't chew them. It takes forever to eat them. It's not efficient. It doesn't taste really like anything. It doesn't really taste even like chocolate. I'm out.
Yeah, I don't like them at all. The weird hard candies that come in wrappers that look like strawberries. Yeah, those are, you say, and I could not agree more. You express this extremely well. You say, I have no idea what these are called or where they come from. I've never seen them for sale. It's like they just manifest inside the homes of old women from Long Island and sometimes find their way into Halloween bags. Those are always the disappointing things at the end. I grew up in Ruston, Louisiana, so couldn't be further away from where you grew up, and I would get those in my Halloween bag and just toss. Done.
Yeah, they probably come from Long Island. I bet the people they were shipped to, like old people shipped them to each other from Montauk or something.
And then Smarties. I hate Smarties. If you're going to do Smarties, go the brand name and pass out Sweet Tarts.
Yeah, at least Sweet Tarts are like have a sour, like there's a taste. I feel like Smarties are a little bit in the Tootsie Roll camp where there's not really a lot of taste. And if you're going to eat junk food, shouldn't you at least get taste out of it? I mean, if you want to just go drink sugar, you just go drink sugar. Yeah. Sweet Tarts at least have like a pop to them, you know?
See, I'm a believer. My wife and I fight about this every year. We fight about this every single year because she wants to go cheap and it's like just buy some bubble gum.
And
I'm like, no, 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 no. This is Halloween. Kids should get dressed up and don't just put a sheet over you. No, you got to put a little effort into this if you're a kid. I mean, there's got to be some strategy. You need to hit. You hit the ideally. In my opinion, as a kid, you get out early enough to survey the land. You find who's got the good stuff, who's not worth going back. You come back to your base, you change outfits, change into a new Halloween costume, and then go back and selectively hit the hot spots and load up. That's how you should do it as a kid. That is trick-or-treating the right way.
Yeah, that's a hustle is what that is, and it's a good one. They go through all this trouble to dress up for you. You can do better than Wrigley's Spearmint Gum or whatever you're giving out. You can put a little bit of, you know, you can spend $2 extra and get some decent candy for these kids, you know?
Oh, I'm going to spend an extra $50.
There you go.
I'm going to go to Kroger, and I'm going to get the Snickers. The Three Musketeers, get the candy bars, because if you're passing out candy bars, you're cool. You're doing Halloween the right way.
It's like, yeah, this is like you're some people go out and spend thousands of dollars on 4th of July mortars. This is Neil's 4th of July. I spent $3,000 on Baby Ruth's.
Yeah, see, to me, I like 4th of July, but 4th of July can be somewhat overrated because it's so hot. Like you tell yourself, man, I'm gonna grill. I'm going to smoke all this this brisket. I'm going to smoke these ribs and stuff. And you're out in the heat doing it all day. And by the time 8 o'clock rolls around, you don't really want to eat ribs and stuff. You just want to drink. You just want beer at that point.
You know, there are worse holidays than that.
Yeah, I mean, I like the 4th of July. Don't get me wrong. It's just what I like about Halloween is it's cooled off enough where at nighttime it's a little cool. You can get out. It's just, I don't know. To me, it's also kind of I like the fall holidays. And I mean, like me, like a lot of people, I mean, I like Thanksgiving. I love Christmas. It's fun. It's kind of the kickoff to the holiday season.
Yeah. It's a nice gateway into the holiday season for sure. And plus, you know, the pageantry that goes with it and all the decorations and the people dressed up and adults dressed up and kids dressed up. And it's cool. I like it. I enjoy the buy-in.
I have a costume that I use some years that I'll pop out from bushes and scare little kids, and that's fun because you'll scare them to the point that the candy goes flying in the air, and that's awesome.
Is it an Ed Orgeron costume?
I dress up as Ed Orgeron. This year I'm gonna dress up
scare athletic directors.
Yeah, I'm gonna get some old Ole Miss mascot costumes and dress up. All right, last thing we're taping is probably by the time people hear this, it's probably going to be done. Cubs Mets game, I mean, Cubs Nationals game five tonight. Yeah, Cubs Nats. Who wins?
Well, you know I'm a default Cubs fan here because as a lifelong Mets fan, I cannot stand the Washington Nationals. I would like to see the Cubs win. The Nationals don't deserve to win anything ever, especially the way that Dusty Baker mismanages everything. So I'm Team Cubs. I'll stick with the Cubs. Stick with your Cubs.
I'll sure hope you're right because it doesn't matter. Neither one of those teams is beating
now,
the Dodgers.
Now, somebody could come back around and smack the Yankees too. That would be nice. We could get the Nats and the Yankees out of this thing, and then I can rest easy.
Yeah, as a Mets fan, watching the Yankees do this has to hurt a little, huh?
Yeah, because it's kind of supposed to be us, you know? I mean, before the season, it was like, oh, hey, we have four aces, and it's like, suddenly we have one good pitcher and the entire lineup's hurt.
Cespedes
doesn't care about baseball anymore.
I saw the Mets in Chicago in September and they were sad.
It's a sad situation, man. I went to five games at City this year and I go every time they play in Miami, and it's just by the end of it, they played here. Or I went to the last series at City Field this year against Washington, and it was a sad, sad, sad situation.
Hey, man, I really appreciate the time. Enjoy talking to you. I'm glad you were not in the wrong place at the wrong time in Vegas. I certainly mean that with all possible respect to the victims and their families, but I'm glad you weren't a little further down the strip. That had to be scary, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Yeah, no, we'll see you soon, Neil. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Rob. Bye.
All right, bye.
Thanks again to Rob Cassidy. We'll be back next week. We'll have Russell Johnson back on the show. He's going to have Jacob Peeler, the Ole Miss wide receivers coach, on the program. We will talk to Russell and Jacob. Then again, our thanks to Rob Cassidy. Our thanks to Billy's Pecans, to John Bonelli, to the Storage Acquisition Group. That does it for this edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. Until next week, take care.